This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Lisa Murkowski takes the lead. Rahm Emanuel starts there, and Sarah Palin wins Word of the Year. It's Wednesday, and time for a refuteate edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. This week, we begin with a pop quiz. Senator Lisa Murkowski could be the first write-in candidate to win since?
Strom Thurmond, 1954.
New York's Charlie Rangel is the first member of Congress found guilty on ethics charges since?
Neil Conan, 2007. Oh, ethics charges?
Yeah.
The first ethics guy? Well, of course, Traficant was removed. He was ousted from Congress, expelled.
That would have been the right answer.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ken.
Okay.
San Francisco and Chicago will get new mayors in different ways. And it won't be an earmark business as usual, at least for Senate Republicans, as Minority Leader Mitch McConnell bows before the Tea Party and Jim DeMint. Later in the program, English chef Jamie Oliver's tour of American cooking. But first, as usual, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. And as usual, we begin with a trivia question. Ken.
I have a trivia question for you now.
Of
course, a lot of British stuff on the news lately. The Beatles.
Royal wedding.
Right. The Prince William is engaged to Kate Middleton. I have Prince Albert in a can. That's an old joke. We also have the Beatles. Beatles made their music available on iTunes. And by coincidence, I had an English muffin for breakfast this morning. But going back to the Beatles, here's a Beatle-related trivia question. What Beatles song referred to two heads of government within a few lines of each other, and who were the political leaders mentioned?
If you think you know the answer to this week's trivia question, the Beatles song that referred to two heads of government within a few lines of each other and the political leaders mentioned, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. The winner, of course, wins a fabulous no prize T-shirt. Ken, we have one new member of the House of Representatives.
Well, we have a member-elect, certainly, and that is what happened yesterday in Illinois' 8th Congressional District. Melissa Bean, first elected in 2004, defeated Phil Crane, longtime Republican veteran. Of course, if he's longtime, he would be a veteran,
veteran
right there.
Too. Yeah,
those words right there.
Say, yeah.
But Melissa Bean was not expected to be on an endangered list, and she lost by fewer than 300 votes to Joe Walsh. Not the singer, but the Republican backed by the Tea Party. And so now the Republican...
So are you telling me there was a bean count in Illinois?
There certainly was. And there are now 61, a net gain of 61 more Republicans in the new Congress, with a possibility of three more. There are six House races still outstanding, three of which Tim Bishop in New York, Dan Maffei in New York State, and Solomon Ortiz in Texas. Those are three Democratic incumbents who were trailing their opponents. So the Republican lead could go up to 64 seats.
We're going to talk about the Alaska Senate seat, which also remains undecided, at least formally, later, as Libby Casey of Alaska Public Radio will be joining us. But in the meantime, there is a mayoral race underway in the city of Chicago.
There is, and they've been talking about it for some time now. Of course, this weekend, filing period opened up for Mayor of Chicago. Richard M. Daley is retiring after 21 years. Rahm Emanuel threw his hat in the ring and filed signatures, along with former Senator Carol Moseley Braun. Danny Davis, who's a congressman from Chicago, is also in the race. Former school president Jerry Chico is in the race. It's going to be a wide-open contest. The election, the deadline is November 22nd. The election is next February 22nd.
And there will also be a new mayor in San Francisco.
There will be, because Gavin Newsom was elected lieutenant governor under Jerry Brown, and now San Francisco has never had an openly gay mayor or an Asian American mayor, and both groups are jockeying for power in the post Gavin Newsom era.
And I guess we're going to get a new mayor in Oakland as well, but that's another process entirely.
That's correct.
Let's talk about we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question, and that, of course, is that the Beatles song that named two heads of government and the names of those heads of government, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Chris is on the line from Long Island. Chris, you're on the line.
I hear Neil Conan.
I can hear him, too. He's talking to some guy on the radio.
Email talk@npr.org. Chris is on the line.
Chris?
Yes.
Yes, you have to listen. You have to listen on the phone, Chris, but go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm wonderful. The song is Taxman.
Well, that's Ken.
The song is Taxman, and who are the two leaders?
Edward Heath and Wilson, if I remember right. I know it's Edward Heath and Mr. Wilson.
I think we're going to listen to auditory evidence that you are correct, sir.
Don't ask me what I want it for. Mr. Wilson, if you don't want to pay some more. Mr. Heath, because I'm the tax man.
So, Chris, congratulations. Ding, ding, ding. You'll be the happy possessor of a Political Junkie No Prize t-shirt, or we'll put you on hold, and we'll send it to you in return for a promise to take a digital picture of yourself so we can post it on our wall of shame.
Thank you, Neil.
All right.
Thank you, Ken.
All right.
Neil, let me just say one thing. There was a line in Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie, one of my favorite David Bowie songs. He says, keep your electric eye on me, babe. Put your ray gun to my head. That's not a Ronald Reagan.
Not a Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
Well, speaking of Republican leaders, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, the minority leader still, though he will have a vastly increased minority, but he will not be taking any more pork home to the state of Kentucky. He appeared on the Senate floor after a power play by Jim DeMint, the senator from South Carolina, who said he had the votes in the Republican caucus to have all Republicans refuse to take earmarks. And this is what the minority leader said the next day in the well of the Senate.
I have to lead first by example. Nearly every day that the Senate's been in session for the past 2 years, I've come down to this very spot and said that Democrats were ignoring the wishes of the American people. When it comes to earmarks, I won't be guilty of the same thing. Make no mistake, I know the good that has come from the projects that I've helped support throughout my state.
And Mitch McConnell has been a prolific earmarker.
He has, and yet you could thank or blame either one, Jim DeMint, but you could also blame or thank the voters in 2010, because they were basically saying, look, earmarks may be a symbolic cut in spending. It's 0.3% of all federal spending, but it is a sign of government spending out of control, wasteful spending. And that was among the key messages that at least Tea Party voters voted on November 2nd. And I think Mitch McConnell recognized that.
And indeed, the woman generally recognized as one of the leaders of the Tea Party, Sarah Palin, got famous for denouncing the bridge to nowhere.
Exactly right. And but some Democrats are coming on board too. Claire McCaskill, for example, has broken with her Democratic brethren or sisteren or whatever it's called.
Sorority.
And, yes. Exactly. And she also said she's going to call for a full Senate vote banning earmarks.
But the majority leader says, no. Absolutely. He's still in favor of earmarks.
Exactly. That's Harry Reid. And he said that at a press conference yesterday with Democrats standing by his side.
And there was a sad moment in the House earlier this week. The ethics trial for the longtime congressman from New York, Charles Rangel, who represents Harlem, of course. And he was convicted of corruption yesterday. Before he did, he pulled out the Hail Mary.
50 years of public service is on the line. I truly believe that I'm not being treated fairly, and that history will dictate that, notwithstanding the political calendar, I am entitled to a lawyer during this proceeding.
Charlie Rangel then found he was not going to be given the time to, as he said, hire new counsel, and walked out of the proceedings, and he was then found guilty on 11 counts of ethics violations.
Well, you know, it's a guy who killed his parents and then pleaded for mercy because he's an orphan. He had attorneys, he had legal counsel until he parted ways with them in October, and for him to say that I don't have legal counsel, well, obviously the members of the House Ethics Committee, clearly divided equally between Democrats and Republicans, didn't have sympathy for that comment. The full Ethics Committee will decide on a penalty tomorrow, Thursday, and then followed by a vote in the full House. Nobody thinks it'll be expulsion. As we said, Jim Trafficant and Ozzie Myers of Abscam fame were the only guys thrown out since Civil War, but it could be a reprimand or a rebuke or something like that.
And, of course, Charlie Rangel overwhelmingly reelected.
81% of the vote in his Harlem district on November 2nd, right?
But unlikely to be able to reclaim his leadership of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Well, he certainly stepped down voluntarily as chairman. Of course, Republicans Republicans now control the House in the 112th Congress. But there was some talk by his allies saying that he should be back to the ranking Democrat on the committee. I doubt if that will happen, especially in the wake of these convictions.
And there's another ethics trial still to come.
And that's Maxine Waters, the end of November. A different matter, but of course she's a California Democrat, also has to do with personal finances.
And as we're talking about the new Congress, the new members of the members-elect of the House of Representatives showed up this week for orientation, including, interestingly, an orientation from the Tea Party.
That's right. They did. And matter of fact, that could be one of the key interesting blocks in the new Congress. And if we always talk about what the Tea Party may have cost the Republican Party on the Senate side, perhaps the Delaware, the Nevada, the Colorado races. But on the House side, their numbers are strong and vibrant, and they're going to have a big, you know, a lot to say in the next Congress.
And they may have also a new Republican Party chairman. Michael Steele is facing some opposition.
Well, he's been a controversial figure from day one for the two years he's been chairman. And now Gentry Collins, who is the political director of the RNC, resigned yesterday and sent out a scathing 5-page letter to all members of the RNC, saying that Steele mismanaged money, didn't take advantage of opportunities the Republicans had, even though they won control of the House. But they could have had 3 more House seats, 5 more governorships, 21 more House seats. Steele is up for re-election January 13th to the 15th. That's when the RNC has its next meeting. He has not said whether he plans to run again, but it was tremendous internal opposition to him succeeding himself as chair.
Any early nominees to replace him?
Well, there's this mention of Haley Barbour, who's, of course, talking about running for president, and he's a former RNC chair who was very successful during the Clinton years. He's, of course, his nephew is an RNC member from Mississippi. He may run. Saul Anousis, who's from Michigan, is talking about running. Even the former political director who resigned yesterday could be running. Where a lot of people are waiting to see if Steele takes the hint and decides to and announces that he won't run, and then you'll probably see more candidates coming forward.
Haley Barbour, of course, attending the Republican Governor's Conference at the moment, where there are, I think, no fewer than 5 potential candidates for president of the United States at that conference. Ken Rudin, stay with us. Our political junkie is with us every week on Wednesday, and he joins us in Studio 3A. You can also read his blog and download his podcast at npr.org/junkie. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Bart Stupak, who's retired as a Democratic representative and, well, has some words to say about moderates in Congress. Can they survive? Stay with us from that. We'll also get an update on Alaska. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin is with us. This is the closest he'll ever come to having his own reality show, we hope. You can also find Ken uncensored on his blog at npr.org/junkie. You can also take a shot there at his scuttle button puzzle or download his podcast. In a moment, we'll talk with Representative Bart Stupak, a moderate Democrat who's represented northern Michigan since 1993. Earlier this year, he found himself at the center of the health care fight, and it got nasty as he found himself getting it from both sides. Now he's ready to retire in a few weeks at the end of the term. There are a number of moderates not returning to Washington in January, so what role will moderates play in the next Congress? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And Congressman Stupak joins us now on the line from his office here in Washington. Nice to have you on the program with us today.
Well, thanks.
And I wonder if you're feeling a little nostalgic as the lame duck session gets underway.
Yeah, a little bit, but not. I was ready to leave. I mean, it was a good decision for me and my family, and I'm looking forward to starting a new chapter in my life.
And how much did the health care debate and the vitriol that was directed at you from both sides, I have to say, how much did that play in your decision?
Very little. I had decided long before that that this was probably my last term. I had been going back and forth for a couple terms, but I had told my wife and a couple others on election night in 2008 I was probably done. But, you know, I'd wait till the whole health care done was over, votes and all that were over before I'd make my final decision. But I'd pretty much resigned myself to the fact I wasn't going to run anymore.
And why was that? Just you'd had enough or that?
I had enough, burned out. I've got a massive district. I never planned on staying as long as I did. I stayed 18 years, and I just wanted out. So there were just a number of issues there. When I go home, I'm never home. And my district is half the state of Michigan. It's 600 miles from one end to the other. And so I'm just never home, and I'm just getting tired of it. And so it was time to move on. And I always told folks I was never a lifer, if you will, that I want to do other things in my life. I didn't think I'd stay here as long as I did.
Ken?
Congressman, you said the vitriol did not affect your decision to retire, but clearly it had to take a toll on you and your family. If you think of all the anger that was directed at members of Congress this year, I don't think anybody was a more symbolic target than you, and you got it from both the left and the right.
Right, so obviously I was doing my job well. Neither side was happy. But health care is something I believed in strongly, so I didn't mind taking some of the guff that you took, but you know, when you get the personal threats and when you look at it, you know, after I got all the way through the healthcare, and I do it every year, every 2 years when I sit down, I always go to my family and make the list of positive and negative. The negativity of the healthcare just convinced me even more that it was probably time to leave. I was, like I said, I was going to do that to begin with. I was thinking about leaving anyways, and then that was just sort of the icing on the cake, was all the problems we had with healthcare. And if both sides mad at you, then that's probably you probably are moving in the right direction with your position, because unfortunately, and out here in Washington, Congress, it's become more partisan, not less partisan. You can see the drastic change in the 18 years I was here. And I'm afraid with the swing with the last election here with midterms that the House will even become more partisan, not less partisan.
Well, you seem to have a Democratic Party that's more liberal and a Republican Party more conservative, including
sure.
Your first district now represented by a Republican endorsed by local Tea Party groups and Sarah Palin.
And, you know, my district in history usually is, when it's, the history of the district has always been Republican. It's about 55-45 Republican. So when someone like myself, who holds the district and holds it for a while, the opposite party retires, it usually goes back to its natural roots, if you will, or its natural leanings, which in this case is Republican. How much the Tea Party or Palin had to do with it, I think is somewhat limited.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. I think we're starting with a caller from your district. Marty on the line from Traverse City in Michigan.
Yes, hi, Representative Stupak.
Hello.
I'm just calling to say thank you so much for your service, and we're really going to miss you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I enjoyed it, but it's time for me to move on.
I know you had a lot of quandaries over voting for the health care bill, but you did the right thing.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Marty, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is another Marty, as it happens, but this one from Northwestern Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yes.
Go ahead.
We're bordering Mr. Stupak's district, so it's kind of old home week. Well, I'm really hoping the moderates can help slow down this moratorium on funding for local projects, the earmarks that the Republican caucus really, really wants to do. I just would like to make this a little personal. Here's what that would mean for my area of northwestern Wisconsin. We have three federally funded health care clinics here. Patients pay according to their income on a sliding fee scale, which means if you've got a low income, you pay $30 for services. That could be an annual exam, blood work, emergencies, whatever. They also have a dental clinic associated with them on the same sliding fee scale. My husband just had a crown put in for $30. Our congressman was Dave Obey, who really championed these clinics, but my fear is that our new representative, who's a Republican, will fall in with the caucus and freeze funding for these really valuable facilities. It feels to me that following the midterm elections, the gap between the rich and poor has widened hugely. It doesn't seem to me that the wealthy are being asked to sacrifice anything. They're going to keep many more of their millions because the tax cuts are going to stay in effect.
Marty, are you declaring a run for Congress?
Oh, my God.
That sounds like a pretty good speech there. But let's see if we get a response from Bart Stupak.
Sure. Actually, I would argue that the federally health clinics are really a qualified health clinics are really a program, not an earmark. Now, if the congressperson from your part of Wisconsin there, and Dave Obey was a champion of health care, fought his whole career, 34 years for health care, wanted something like, let's put an addition on the clinic that the clinic could not pay for in its own budget, then that would be an earmark because it specifically went to a clinic for a specific purpose. And sometimes those earmarks are necessary. But the funding for the programs to make sure that people have access to quality, affordable health care should continue as funding as a program. So you can go to the clinic and if on a sliding fee scale, pay your fee. That's a program, I would argue, and I would argue that that is a program, not an earmark. If you want something fancy for that one specific clinic requested by a member, then that would be considered an earmark. So I think the general funding for the federally qualified health clinics should continue under the program.
Marty, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Ken?
Congressman, the Democrats suffered their biggest loss this month, or the biggest loss since 1938. First of all, the Democrats are voting right now on their new leaders. One, how much of it was Nancy Pelosi's fault? And two, should she be the leader of the Democrats in the 2011 Congress?
No, it's not Nancy Pelosi's fault. I mean, I agree that they ran commercials and vilified her. And everything, but people then, I really find it hard to believe that people voted against a member of Congress because Nancy Pelosi is the speaker. You know, when Democrats, when Newt Gingrich was the speaker, we've tried to vilify him. There's more to it than that. It's not just Nancy Pelosi. So, number one, I think she'll still be leader of the Democratic Party after today.
She will be. She just got word from the Associated Press she's been reelected leader of the Democratic Congress.
Right. And it's not any one person. I think, you know, there was a mood. You have unemployment in my state, 13.6%. Michigan was, unfortunately, still second highest. If unemployment was 5% and they ran the same ads about Nancy Pelosi, Democrats would still be in charge. It wasn't Pelosi. It was the circumstances of the economy, the frustration. People didn't see it change fast enough, and they wanted a change in direction of our government. And I know House members run every 2 years, and people say, why don't you change it? Why don't it be 4 years or 6 years or 3 years? You got to do something. You can't be doing it every 2 years. And I always argue back, no, the 2-4-6-year scheme we're under, 2 years for the House, 4 years for the President, 6 years for the Senate, we that's where we take our frustrations out. Is every 2 years at the ballot box, and people voice that frustration, and, you know, it'll swing back again. So it's not Nancy Pelosi's fault.
Well, that's one more caller. This is Cornelius. Cornelius with us from Morganton in North Carolina.
Yeah, thanks. Congressman Stupak, I just admire you for being a pro-life liberal. I don't know if that means you're a moderate or not, but I think that on the budget and taxes, that a moderate would say, right now, we need more tax cuts and we need more spending, and then we'll figure out a way to cut the budget later.
The deficit, yeah. But would you agree with that, Congressman?
No, I mean, if you know, one of the big things that people wanted was less spending by government. If you lower taxes, first of all, who's going to get the tax break? The Bush tax breaks, I did not agree with. And if I have a chance to vote on the same vote on completely on the Bush tax breaks with no changes, I think there'll be some changes. But if there are no changes, I would vote again against them because that's near $2 trillion. If we're so far in debt and everyone's saying we got to stop spending, why would you put further tax cuts and put the nation further in the hole?
Well, so, I would say that the tax cuts should be short term, and mean a one year cut on Social Security taxes. And then maybe that boosts the economy a little bit. And then
we did that. 95% of the people in this country got tax break underneath the stimulus package. People seem to forget that.
Hmm. Well, we need more stimulus. We need more stimulus.
Where do we get the money?
Good luck on that program, Cornelius. Didn't do so well in the last election. Finally, Congressman, a lot of people who retire from Congress move their offices from Capitol Hill down to K Street. Are you going to be staying in Washington?
No, right now I'm having discussions with Harvard actually to go teach at the Kennedy School of Government in the spring of this year. So we're in those discussions. Nothing's finalized. So why be having an office come January 1st in K Street? I doubt it.
All right. Well, Congressman Stupak, thank you very much. We appreciate your time and good luck to you.
Thanks.
Bart Stupak represents the 1st District of Michigan, joined us today from his office in Washington. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Libby Casey, the Washington reporter for the Alaska Public Radio Network. And Libby, nice to have you with us again.
Thank you. Great to be here.
This could be the last time. There could finally be a result.
Last time I'm here?
No, well, no, the last time this election, anyway.
No, let there be more drama so I can come join you guys again. No, Senator Murkowski is on her way up to Alaska as we speak, and she's expected to declare victory, possibly as early as tonight. The write-ins are counted. All these ballots that had to be painstakingly looked at by hand have all been gone through. There's still about 600 ballots yet to be counted, absentees, late returns from overseas voters in the military. But at this point, it's certainly her race.
And last time I looked, her lead was something like 10,000.
That's right, 10,000. In the lead, and if we take away the votes that the Joe Miller campaign, that's the Republican nominee, the votes that he's challenged, she's still ahead by 2,200 votes. So that's safe enough in Alaska.
And is Joe Miller coming under pressure at this point to say, enough is enough, I'm going to abandon any court fight?
No. We're not sure yet when he will concede, if he will concede. He indicated that he wanted to wait till all the ballots are counted, and that, as we said, may happen as soon as today. So we may hear from him soon, but his camp has said they really want to see a recount here, and they've even asked maybe for a hand recount. They said since Lisa Murkowski got all her ballots counted by hand, what about ours? Now, that's not what happens. I mean, if they do a recount in Alaska, they'll go through the sort of same optical scan system that happened previously. The state will only pay for a recount if there's a half a percentage split between them. But he may try to solicit funds and ask for a recount that he would pay for himself. Yesterday, Mike Huckabee was tweeting that he wanted to see people support Joe Miller, maybe contribute to the recount effort.
We're talking with Libby Casey of Alaska Public Radio and political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Lisa Murkowski seems to be one of the few people who are openly disparaging Sarah Palin. She was on this interview show. She says she doesn't have the intellectual curiosity. Obviously, the enmity between Palin and Murkowski remains.
Now, it took Katie Couric, that's the CBS interview, a couple of pushes to sort of get Senator Murkowski to talk about Sarah Palin. And Senator Murkowski said, we're not close, but I certainly think that we could work together on something if it was for the good of Alaska, for the good of the country. But she ultimately did say, when pressed, yes, I don't think that Sarah Palin has the intellectual curiosity, essentially, to be president. And she says that, you know, really, Sarah Palin's outside. She's not necessarily keyed in the state right now, and that Lisa Murkowski thinks that she herself is. So there is that split there. As you know, the history, Lisa Murkowski's father, Frank Murkowski, was defeated in the governor's race a few years ago.
By Sarah Palin.
So there is that division there. But it is sort of interesting to watch the Katie Couric interview. It had a B-roll footage of Lisa Murkowski walking around Capitol Hill with a backpack, sort of looking very Alaskan, I would have to say. And then contrast that to the big reality show that debuted on Sunday night of Sarah Palin's Alaska. Two women who represent the state. And Sarah Palin backed Joe Miller in this race. And the fact that Lisa Murkowski's been able to launch a write-in bid after losing the primary, after losing to the Sarah Palin-backed candidate, and win in Alaska is significant. It shows that there is this voice for maybe a moderate, someone who's going back to the old school idea of, yeah, I'll bring home the bacon. Yes, I will bring home those federal dollars. I will fight for Alaska in that way. Whereas Joe Miller said more of this Tea Party line, we need to, you know, fight the deficit. We need to fight the problems. And he had more of this Sarah Palin ethos. It didn't work.
Alaska receives $7 federal dollars in return for every one it sends to Washington, D.C. But the other part of this is that Senator Murkowski said she may be somewhat less reliable a Republican next time around, given the fact that the party hierarchy abandoned her.
They did. They supported Joe Miller as the nominee that the state, the voters had decided upon. But she was asked to leave the leadership. She was the only woman in the Republican leadership team in the Senate, asked to step down. She's no longer a part of that. The fight right now is going to be to see whether she can keep her ranking spot on the Energy Committee, which is very important to her and very important to Alaska. She says that's her primary focus. There's not a guarantee yet that she will get to keep it, but that's what she's gunning for. Now, Lisa Murkowski is still a Republican. This is different than what happened with Joe Lieberman,
right,
who ran as an independent. We see that I next to his name, even though he caucuses with the Democrats. Murkowski says, I'm still an R. I still count myself as an R. I'll be in conference with them. Nothing's changing with that.
Ken?
I'm just going to say that that's exactly why the NRSC, the Republican Senatorial Committee, backed Joe Miller, because Joe Miller was its nominee. Remember when Robert Smith was a senator from New Hampshire, he quit the Republican Party, became an independent, but once he went back to the Republican Party, he became a chairman of a committee. So it's the R that's next to your name that's all determining what goes on there.
There was one funny ballot. You know, the Joe Miller camp was challenging a lot of the ballots at every division of elections table up in Juneau, Alaska, where they were counting these ballots by hand, looking at each of them, there was a representative of Team Miller and one of Team Murkowski. And the Team Miller guy or woman would say, challenge. And then Team Murkowski would say, counter your challenge. So it was sort of an interesting dynamic process. But one of the ballots they challenged was someone had written in Lisa Murkowski and then R next to her name. So and then Murkowski camp said, no, that's still her. That's still our girl. There was sort of that dynamic playing out. But, as she's walked around Capitol Hill this week, some reporters and other folks have sort of questioned, well, what is your identity? And she says, I am still a Republican, but I'm not going to kowtow to the leadership, and I am going to do my own thing. And so she may be one of these people who can work across party lines. And that was the reputation she had. And a lot of Alaskans feel that she moved farther to the right in the last couple of years. So we'll see if she swings back to the center.
Libby Casey, the Washington correspondent for Alaska Public Radio, here with us in Studio 3A. As always, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Just an update again. Nancy Pelosi reelected as leader of the Democratic Party in Congress, and also Steny Hoyer of Maryland will be the whip, and James Clyburn of South Carolina will take a new role as the House number 3 Democrat. Thanks very much to NPR political junkie Ken Rudin with us every Wednesday. When we come back, we're switching from American politics to American food. This is NPR News.